I think that people die in the shadows. And if we can start to look for help, get support, talk about it, that can really make a difference.
This is Family Policy Matters with NC Family President John Rustin.
Thanks for joining us this week for Family Policy Matters. It's no secret that a drug addiction crisis is plaguing our state and our nation. Overdose on opioids and other drugs is now the leading cause of accidental deaths in North Carolina, even above automobile accidents and gun-related homicides. Needless to say, many of our state's families have been impacted in some way by the opioid epidemic. Our guest today has dedicated himself to turning back the tide on this trend after losing his best friend to addiction. Board certified in psychiatry, addiction medicine, and medical management, our guest is Dr. Omar Manajwala. He's the chief medical officer at CatAssist in Charlotte, North Carolina, and one of the leading experts on addiction. Dr. Manajwala, welcome to Family Policy Matters. It's great to have you on the show.
Thanks, John. It's really great to be here, and thanks to you, and also to the North Carolina Family Policy Council for focusing on this critically important issue.
Now, Dr. Manajwala, as we begin our conversation, give us some perspective on the scope of the opioid epidemic today, both nationally and here in North Carolina.
Sure. So nationally, and some of the data are a little bit old because it takes time to pull it together, but nationally we had about 64,000 overdose deaths in 2016, and all the evidence points to the fact that that is increased in 2017 and in early 2018. So, you know, just to put that in perspective, that's more Americans than die from gun violence. It's more than die from motor vehicle accidents. That's more than die from HIV and AIDS. It's actually more deaths than the Vietnam and Iraq wars combined, which is staggering. And then if you look at North Carolina over the last, say, 15 years, we estimate that about 12,000 North Carolinians have died from overdoses. And so the most recent data is that we're losing about 4 North Carolinians per day from these overdoses. And that's just the deaths, John, because if you look at all the other costs and challenges. We have about 16 North Carolinians who are visiting ERs every day for overdoses, almost $2 billion in medical expenses, and it's all getting worse. I mean, so the figures have quadrupled over the last 15 years. There's really no evidence that it's getting any better yet. Most of the deaths are from combinations of drugs, and even though prescription overdoses are more common than, say, you know, your heroin or your illicit overdoses, that's not going to continue for long because the rate at which the heroin overdoses is rising is it's over 800% over the last 5 years. So, you know, that this is not heading in a good direction. We are trying to solve this in North Carolina. I know you guys are, and legislators and others are trying to solve this, but we're still pretty far behind. You know, in North Carolina, we have one of the lowest rates of doctors who are certified to prescribe effective treatments for this. And so it's not the worst rate, but we're among the lowest in terms of providers able to help people with this crisis. So that puts it in context, and it's a serious problem. It's not getting better.
Well, it sure is a serious problem, and those rates of increase of deaths and addictions are really staggering. Who is, based on your research and experience, who is most acceptable to falling victim to an opioid addiction?
Yeah, so, you know, in terms of susceptibility, and I think this is really important, anybody can develop addiction. So it has nothing to do with willpower. People with very strong constitutions, even very strong faith, can develop this condition. So for many addictions, about half the risk of developing the addiction appears to be genetic. It affects any race, culture, ethnicity, socioeconomic group, faith. It affects men and women. There are some risk factors. Obviously, there are some risk factors. Men are slightly more at risk than women. The highest risk we see are between ages 16 and 45. And then some really, really strong risk factors are having sexual abuse as a pre-adolescent, having been abused, or having a personal history of some other addiction, or even a family history of addiction as a risk factor. And then really, really strong risk factors are depression, anxiety, and other mental illnesses. And in both in North Carolina and in the United States, right now, whites are more likely to become addicted to opioids than other races. followed by Native American and Indigenous peoples. But again, it really can't affect anybody.
Well, one of the most troubling aspects of this epidemic is how easily someone can move from using opioids legitimately for pain relief after surgery, for example, to getting hooked and falling into an addiction. Talk to us a little bit about the progression of this problem among someone who, you know, may initially use opioids for pain relief, but then gets hooked and moves into these other more problematic stages of drug use.
Well, and your question, I think, says it, which is that addiction is a chronic, progressive, and if left untreated, fatal illness. It does progress. It doesn't get better. It gets worse unless we intervene. I think one of the key points to note here, and this is true in North Carolina, by the way, as well, that even though we reduce opioid prescribing, the overdose rates keep going up. And part of that is because of the supply in the medicine cabinets and on the street, switching, like you described, to heroin and this illicit fentanyl. And even though we've made progress on prescribing, we haven't solved the root causes. Most of the epidemic is not fueled by people with chronic pain who are switching to illicit drugs. But on the other hand, there's a lot of evidence that suggests that there's a problem related to how much supply of opioids we have floating around in medicine cabinets and on the streets and available to people. And if you look at people who overdose, and you do some research on kind of what their lives were like before they started for the overdose, what you find is that in many cases there was addiction to other substances that occurred before they started using opioids, or they had serious mental illness or other history of trauma or other risk factors in the past. So the opioids are one risk factor, but a lot of times we see a lot of other risk factors. So bottom line is that we have to be sensible, you know, doctors and others have to be sensible when we prescribe these drugs, because if somebody has one of these risk factors, then this is not the best person to be receiving necessarily opioids. And in all these cases, we should have access to reversing the overdose by, there's a medication called naloxone, which is a little bit like the defibrillator for opioid addiction in the sense that if someone overdoses, you can use that to reverse them. So people should have access to that too. But yeah, you know, to answer your question, these are progressive illnesses, and if we don't intervene, more people are going to die.
You're listening to Family Policy Matters, a resource from NC Family. To listen to our radio show online and for more resources that will help you be a voice of persuasion in your community, go to our website at ncfamily.org.
So what kind of warning signs should families look for that could indicate that a loved one may be falling into an opioid addiction or other drug addiction for that matter?
Now, that's one of the most common questions that I get. You know, how do I know? How do I know if my son or daughter or my wife or husband? And so one important point there is that using drugs is not addiction. So some people do use drugs recreationally without developing problems. Obviously, it's not something we recommend, but if we're going to face this in a rational way, we've got to be able to see that clearly. And so that means there's no test for addiction. You can test for the presence of drugs in someone's system. You can make them pee in a cup. But that doesn't mean they have addiction. So I recommend your listeners look for three things. Number one, look for the signs of intoxication. Number two, look for the signs of withdrawal, meaning coming off the drug. And number three, look for the signs of addiction. So for intoxication, looks different depending on whether it's opioids or benzos or alcohol or whatever. But for opioids, you want to look for pinpoint pupils, sedation, constipation, slowed breathing, slurred speech, and a lot of times people will be nodding off. For withdrawal from opioids looks a lot like the flu. So you see headache, nausea, fatigue, vomiting, sweating, insomnia, you see restlessness and agitation, irritability, and the pupils will generally dilate in withdrawal. And then the third thing you want to look for are the signs of addiction. So those are the behaviors. So things like shopping for different doctors, sudden financial problems, relationship challenges, anger outbursts, leaving the home at odd hours, unexplained phone calls, lying, shifting the blame. You could see, you know, really wide mood swings. I tell people, trust your gut. If something doesn't seem right, you know, dig deeper.
What would be, Dr. Manijwala, your number one piece of advice or resource for parents who have discovered that one of their children or someone they love may be addicted to opioids or is having a drug problem?
So in so many communities, I see shame and stigma and fear and wanting to keep this private and not get help. So I would say the number one recommendation I would have is get help. Don't be afraid to talk about it. Treatment can be effective. You do need support. And talking about it, I mean, I think that people die in the shadows. And if we can start to look for help, get support, talk about it, that can really make a difference.
Where are some of the best places to seek help for this situation if an individual or someone they care about is struggling with this?
So in North Carolina, there's a nice website that lists all the resources that's available, whether you're a family member, someone yourself who's struggling, law enforcement officer, treatment provider. It's all sort of gathered under one roof, and that is a website that you can go to. It's opioidresources.ncdoj.gov, opioidresources.ncdoj.gov. And it's great because it's sort of a central clearinghouse for us North Carolinians of where to look to get help, where to get treatment, where to get support, where to learn more.
From your experience, what role can faith or spirituality have both in prevention, but also in effective recovery from addiction?
Absolutely. So I gave a talk on this very topic at the Association of Professional Chaplains annual meeting. And then again, last month here in North Carolina at a clergy convocation. And there's a lot of interest in this. And I also write about the role of spirituality in recovery in my book, Craving. And the fact is that spirituality plays a huge role in helping some people get into and stay in recovery, because addiction affects the major domains of life that spirituality addresses. There's actually a great, very old book that's a classic in this called Alcoholism and the Christian Experience by Woodruff. And what Woodruff says is he lays out sort of the spiritual dimensions of addiction and says that it affects things like confession and forgiveness, loss and recovery of hope, the variety of spiritual experiences, pride and humility, the perception of work with a loving and welcoming God. You know, the need for harmony between your values and your behavior, the role of family history and family responsibility, and a bunch of others, and does a nice job of walking through that. And it makes a lot of sense. And for those who are open to it, exploring the role of love and faith and hope and joy and forgiveness and compassion and really all the dimensions of spirituality is really critical for addressing addiction, and it's a component. It's an appropriate component of addiction treatment and care. To make an important point about that, you're not going to solve addiction through spiritual approaches alone in most cases, just like you wouldn't solve most heart disease or cancer through those approaches alone. So you have to get medical care. That's vital. But I think people have sometimes swung the pendulum too far the other way and said, well, there's no role for spirituality. That's just not true. We live in a spiritual world, and people really do. People who are struggling with these kinds of crises of identity, of their own values, of their problems, of their meaning, need to be able to access support in those areas as well.
Well, a great resource to better understand this issue overall, I know, is your book, Craving, Why We Can't Seem to Get Enough. Dr. Manijwala, where can our listeners go to avail themselves of the very helpful information that you've included in this book?
So that book is available everywhere books are sold, or you can go to Amazon, or an easy place to get it is just cravingbook.com. Cravingbook.com is another place.
Great. Well, thank you for all of your work in this arena and for helping our listeners today better understand this topic of opioid and drug addiction. It really is a growing problem in our state and something that we all need to turn our attention to because there will be loved ones that we care about that are impacted by this either directly or indirectly, as we ourselves may well be. So with that, Dr. Omar Manijwala, I want to thank you so much for being with us on Family Policy Matters and for your commitment to addressing such an important issue that is impacting our culture today. We really appreciate your time.
So it's been my absolute privilege to be with you, John, today. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you and to your listeners about the preventable and treatable disease of addiction.
You've been listening to Family Policy Matters, a production of NC Family. to listen to our radio show online, and for more valuable resources and information about issues important to families in North Carolina, go to our website at ncfamily.org and follow us on Twitter and Facebook.